Namaste. Good evening, good afternoon, good morning, and every time in between. So again, it's a huge pleasure to welcome you to our third class and to also express my appreciation for the questions that you guys asked on the Q&A session on Sunday, and to encourage those of you who weren't able to be present to listen to the audio, or actually it's available on the course page, the video of the Zoom. So if you weren't there, you'll also get to see everybody's faces when you tune into it. Before we begin our late contemplation and chat, I want to say that we're going to begin a practice this week called Aharana Pranayama, which is a fairly elaborate pranayama practice that involves breathing into different centers in the body. It's basically a chakra opening practice, and I'm going to ask you to do it as part of your meditation. It's a very grounding practice, and it actually helps join the subtle energy of breath with the even subtler energy of attention. And this capacity of bringing the mind and the breath together, adding the vitality of the breath to the subtlety and directionality of attention, actually creates a balance and integration in these centers. So it's a very good practice to do both for focus and also for your health, which is so influenced by the state of the chakras. Find yourself a comfortable posture. We're of course going to begin by bringing ourselves together in the lake meditation. Find your posture, let the sit bones ground to the seat. Let your upper body rise up through the crown, your shoulder blades release onto the back, your chest lifts and opens. Begin to feel the subtle presence that we've cultivated through all these months of imagining ourselves, of bringing ourselves into the space of the sacred lake, the deep blue lake of consciousness. Feel that you're sitting by the lake, that all of us here, and there are about 200 people in this class. Some of you are actually here live. Some of you are going to be here tomorrow and the next day. But all of us are here in this virtual sangha, sitting around the lake. And with us, you can bring into the circle people you love, people whom you would like to bring the blessing of the lake and the sangha to. And as you inhale, feel that you're drawing in the energy of the lake, the subtle conscious energy of the sacred lake. And as you exhale, feel that the distractions, the worries, the stray thoughts are being dissolved with the breath in the sacred waters. And be present to the felt sense of our gathering, of our community, of the continents and time zones that we encompass, and of the power of satsang, of gathering. You hold in your hand a candle. You're holding it in a jeweled holder. And as you look into the flames of the candle, create an intention for this time together. And then, again, focusing on the candle, offer your practice for the benefit of all beings, asking that through our practice, all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. All beings become free of suffering and the causes of suffering that we experience, all of us and all beings, the sacred joy that lies beyond suffering, that we be filled with equanimity, transcending passion, aversion, and dullness, and that we be fully aware at all times of the absolute equality of all that lives. And bring your candle to the heart and then reverently place it in the water of the lake. Now you can bring your hands into Anjali Mudra or place your right hand over your heart, over the sternum, in the center of the chest, and we'll chant our opening invocation, the chant to the primordial teacher, and the chant to the Guru Patanjali, starting with three Oms. Inhale together. Shivaya Gurave Satchitananda Murataye Nishprapanchaya Shantaya Niralambaya Tejase. Salutations to the Eternal Teacher who lives within all of us as pure being, pure awareness, and pure joy, who is peaceful, luminous, without form, who is never not supporting us. And now the Patanjali invocation mantras. Vande Gurunam Charanaravinde Sandarshita Swatma Sukhava Bodhe Nishreyase Jangalikaya Mane Samsarahala Halamoha Santye Abahu Purushakaram Shankachakra Siddharinam Sahasra Shira Samshvetam Pranamami Patanjalim Pranamami Patanjalim Pranamami Patanjalim. I bow to the lotus feet of the Guru, the awakening happiness of one's own self revealed. Supremely good, acting like a miracle healer, pacifying delusion and the poison of samsara, taking the form of a half-man, half-serpent, holding a conch, a discus, and a sword with 1,000 heads, white in color. I offer my salutations to Patanjali. Now one deep breath. Exhale. Firm your posture. And bring your attention to the center of the forehead. You actually can focus on the forehead itself, on the surface of the skin, thinking of it as a gateway to the inner center, that the forehead is literally a doorway into. So we're going to take three deep, smooth, relaxed breaths, focusing on this center. And in these breaths, see if you can let go of your awareness of the physical dimensions of breathing and immerse yourself in the currents of pranic energy that can begin to be sensed, arising from the center of the forehead and subsiding back into it. Inhale into the center of the forehead, feeling as though the breath literally enters this center, We know that, of course, it's coming in through the nostrils. But because of the power of awareness, you can imagine and feel the breath in the forehead. A second deep breath, breathing into the center of the forehead and breathing out. The breath is soft throughout this practice. And the third breath, softly with great relaxation. Feel the breath energy touching the center of the forehead and flowing out with the exhalation. Now let your awareness flow down to the space between the eyebrows. Inhale into the space between the eyebrows. And exhale, feeling that the breath flows out from that center. Now bring your awareness to the eyes. And take one full breath, feeling the breath touching your eyes with the inhalation and flowing out with the exhalation. Now with your attention in the nostrils, sense the breath flowing into the nostrils and flowing out. And with every phase of this practice, your energy becomes more relaxed and soft. Your awareness comes to the throat, and you inhale into the throat, into the base of the throat, and allow the breath to flow outward. Now focus softly on the shoulders, both shoulders. One breath flowing inward, feeling that the breath enlivens the shoulders and the exhalation flows softly outward. Inhale with the feeling that the inhalation activates the upper arms. And exhale. Bring your awareness to the elbows, inhaling and exhaling. And now the wrists. Breath into the wrists. A soft sighing exhale. Sense into your palms and breathe with the feeling that the inhalation brings your attention into the palms. The exhalation softens and releases through the palms. Now bring your attention to the five fingertips on the right hand. Inhale into the five fingertips and exhale. And the five fingertips on the left hand and exhale. And now allow your awareness to rest in the heart, behind the sternum. Inhale into this space. And softly exhale. bring your awareness to the bottom of the sternum in the area of the diaphragm, the solar plexus. Inhale and exhale. Your awareness now comes to the navel, and the breath flows into the navel. And with the exhalation, you feel that area active, softened, awake. And now to the middle of the pelvis. One full breath. Inhaling and exhaling into the pelvis. And drawing your attention to the perineum, the knob of flesh between the anus and the sexual organ. Take two deep, soft breaths with awareness of the perineum. Bring your attention into the pelvis. Inhale and exhale. Into the navel. Inhale and exhale. Into the area of the solar plexus. One soft breath in and out. The heart. The pit of the throat. The nostrils. The eyes, the space between the eyebrows, the center of the forehead. Now bring your attention to the crown, the top of the head, and take one soft, full breath here. And we'll do one sweeping breath, allowing the breath to flow in as if through the crown, flowing down the center of the body to the perineum, and then with the exhalation, allowing the breath to flow upward and come to rest in the heart, blossoming the heart. And just take a moment and feel your inner body. We're going to be meditating, or actually doing samyama, with a couple of the sutra instructions. Specifically, over the course of the evening, we're going to practice with the navel chakra, with the crown chakra, and hopefully we'll get to the heart and finish with the heart. And actually look at the particular siddhi, the power that the sutra tells us come alive when we're meditating in these centers, and also at the practical experience of meditating in these centers. So last week, and if you've already gone deep into meditation and can't get your eyes to open, that's okay. Last week, we began our discussion of samyama and its relationship to the subtle powers, to the siddhis. And we said last week, and I know that there's been some discussion about it, you know, with your partners and in your own contemplations, that the siddhis, the superpowers that come to us through yoga usually come spontaneously. That is, very few of us are doing actual siddhi practice. The fact is we don't really have to do anything to take them on. They're going to come to us, many of them. And the question is, how are we going to hold them so that they're not obstructive? So, you know, one reason that the powers, the yogic powers that come online for us aren't obstructive is because we get fascinated by them and we start to use them in ways that have unintended consequences. So it's really important in looking at your own progress in on the journey to use your yogic power of samyama, first of all, to really get to know the qualities that are described in the yamas and niyamas, the ethical qualities that are so significant, especially in the higher stages of yoga, when, because, as I believe, is it in Star Wars that this is said, or Spider-Man, that the more power you have, the more important it is to be really conscious of essentially doing no harm, either to yourself or anyone else. And this isn't meant as a warning, just as a fact that when we're relatively powerless, our actions don't have much consequence. The more personal power that we experience, the more our actions and our thoughts impact others. And very often, if we're not used to thinking of ourselves as powerful people, we don't realize this. And it's one of the ways that we can get kind of sidetracked on the path. I have a friend who experienced a very strong Kundalini awakening during which she acquired the power of seeing things at a distance, kind of clairvoyance. The siddhi is actually described in Book 3, Sutra 26, which says, by directing the light of cognition, one obtains knowledge of subtle, concealed, and remote things. And she was quite good at this. She used to actually give information to the FBI, and they used it. You know, she was sort of like that, the character in that TV drama. She also could use it to look into her friends' minds. And she became more enamored of this power and more convinced that it was helpful, she would call her friend up to share the information with them, which was often kind of difficult to hear, the information she would give people. It was like she was seeing into their hidden selves, things about themselves that they might not be aware of and that they might not want to look at. And then she would give them advice. And again, sometimes the advice was really rather punitive. And after a couple of years of this, none of her friends would speak to her anymore because what she was doing was so invasive. And, you know, this is a kind of extreme example. But it's important to realize that siddhis are like talents. And just as our talents and skills enhance our lives and help us act in the world, the siddhis that come through yoga also are part of the richness of life, especially if you use them carefully and for good. But really, the secret is not to let the ego get involved with them. And this is, of course, true of any skill. So when you become aware that certain skill powers have come online, it's important to have a protocol for assessing your motivation and using them. So is there a part of you that's trying to impress people with, you know, your ability to intuit truths or, you know, that you want to get them to like you? How much is your identity bound up in your spiritual gifts? And once you've started in with this method of inquiry, it becomes a kind of samyama in itself. And we could say, in the language of the Yoga Sutra, one of the ways to look at the skills and abilities that come online for you is to ask yourself which guna, which one of the three gunas is predominant in your relationship to this ability. So I want to just say a little bit more about the gunas, because someone asked me in the listserv if I would talk about them, and I thought we might as well do it here in the class, because the gunas, sattva, rajas, and tamas, are such an important aspect of yoga philosophy, and Patanjali refers to them so often, it's really helpful if we get clear about them. The three gunas, sattva, purity, rajas, activity, and tamas, stasis, are cosmic tendencies that they're the cosmic tendencies that make up prakriti. And what that means is that they're always at play, they're always in motion, they are functioning, they're functioning all the time until you're in a totally transcendent state. You know, in the yoga tradition, they say that when you transcend prakriti and when you're fully immersed in the state of purusha and beyond, then you don't experience the gunas. Instead, in Shaivism, the gunas begin to manifest as the three great shaktis of will, knowledge, and activity. It's in the denser states that they become the gunas. But the point is that they're behind everything in the universe. They're subtler even than the quantum level. So, you know, prakriti is like a kaleidoscope, which the colors are always changing, creating different patterns, and it's the movement of the gunas that gives shape and color and depth to the dance of reality, to the fundamental changeability of all of reality. Many of the Indian texts, especially the Bhagavad Gita, can categorize pretty much anything according to which one of the gunas is predominant in it. And, you know, once you start looking through this paradigm, you start to see that everything from the decor of a house to the character of an individual to the current weather can be seen through the lens of the gunas. You know, for instance, a rock is mostly tamasic. It's dense and stable and also more or less stays in one place. But since the molecules are always in motion within the rock, and since the form of the rock will change over time, it also contains some rajasic energy as well. And because all three gunas are always present within the space between the molecules is the sattvic energy. As I say, everything in the universe can be understood according to, you know, the gunas. But the most important thing for us is to use this paradigm as a window into your own mind, because your ever-changing internal experience is actually the effect of the constant flow of the three gunas. So your temperament may have more of the quality of one or another of the gunas, but all of us experience all of them, and all of us experience them changing, sometimes changing so rapidly that you can be in a completely energized mood at one moment and in the next moment just be ready to take a nap. It's really the change of the gunas. So when sattva guna predominates in your mind, you feel clear, peaceful, loving, happy. Your energy is light. Your mood is probably optimistic. When rajaguna predominates, that quality of optimism can often become a kind of grandiosity about the possibilities of life. Your mind moves quickly. There's a lot of thoughts. There are a lot of desires. The ambition, the desire to do big things, to acquire and talk and build and do are all rajasic qualities. Of course, the United States is an intensely rajasic society. And in rajas are also the passions, like anger, jealousy, lust, greediness. When tamas prevails in the mind, that's when you feel dull and stuck. That's when you go to sleep in meditation. And I'm not talking about the kind of enlightened sleep of yoga nidra. I'm talking about, you know, when you just have no energy in meditation, your body's slumping, and you come out and you feel dull and logy. Whereas in sattvic meditation is one where the mind feels clear, where thoughts are few, where the witness is present. And in the process of going deeper into meditation, part of what happens in one session and over time, as you both learn how to sink into deeper meditative states and also how to witness the different states of mind. And when I say witness the different states of mind, I'm not saying that you want to go, oh my God, this is a disaster. My mind is tamasic, what am I going to do? Or I'm so overwrought and agitated, there's something wrong with me. But actually learn to be the witness of these states, to apply the sattvic energy, the sattvic quality of your buddhi, which is that part of you, of the mind that can observe without attachment or aversion. And as you learn to do this, the rajasic and tamasic qualities of the mind actually begin to become less, and the sattvic quality of the mind becomes greater and greater. When you use dharana and dhyana in the service of deepening meditation and focusing the mind, what you're doing from one point of view is coaxing the mind into a state of sattva, which is clearly the most optimal state for meditation because its clarity and light quality render the citta more or less transparent. You know, so it becomes more like a mirror rather than like a TV screen filled with images, which is the state of the normal citta, just clogged with stuff. So, and it's when the citta is transparent that it becomes open to the insight from the deeper layers of your being, from the depths of prakriti. So prajna, insight, and pratibha, true intuition, actually dawn only in a sattvic mind. So true samyama, the kind of samyama that they're talking about in the Yoga Sutra, actually happens when the mind is in a sattvic state, because a rajasic mind can't transcend distraction. And a mind in a tamasic state just doesn't have the precision or the clarity or even the interest in focusing deeply on anything. Tamas is kind of characterized by that state of whatever. You just don't really care. So when you want to do samyama, the best way to cultivate it is to do it post-meditation. In other words, when you want to deeply understand something or receive insight into something, it's much more effective if you do it after you've come out of meditation. So because the more you've been able to deepen in a particular session of meditation, the more true your insights will be. And that said, as over the course of time, and I know this is true for many of you, that many of you here are pretty advanced meditators, as the mind sheds its load of samskaras, the underlying prajna becomes more and more accessible, and we can actually find insight and take ourselves into a state where effective samyama is possible at any time when we're able to get quiet. We're just going to take a moment just to watch the mind, to notice the flow of gunas in the mind. Since I've been explaining this, there's probably some effort of assimilation going on in your mind, or maybe you're second-guessing what I said, or, telling yourself you don't get it. So that would be an example of rajasaguna, a lot of thoughts, a lot of cogitation. Maybe there's a part of you that's sleepy, that's kind of resistant, disinterested, the tamas part of the mind. And then at the same time, and for many of you this may be the predominant feeling, there is a sense of clarity and stillness as the mind settles back. So just for a moment, let the mind roam, and you be the observer, the watcher, and notice how the mind shifts, how fluid it is. And then bring the mind to the breath, letting the mind move, letting the breath flow upward through the nostrils, touching the soft palate, opening up into the ajna, flowing upward, touching the base of the skull, the top of the skull. And then with the exhalation, see if you can extend that spacious energy downward to the heart. The samyama practices that we're going to be doing tonight focus on, as we've said, on the centers of the body that I've found are particularly significant for us in practice. And our intention tonight is to get a sense of what it feels like to actually enter the navel chakra, the crown, and the heart with a particular intention, let's say a particular interest, which is what, you know, that we could say that the difference between the focus of samyama and the focus of dharana, dhyana, samadhi is that in when we start with the dharana, with bedrock focus, and allow it to segue into dhyana, generally speaking, we don't have a particular agenda except in the sense that we want to deepen our meditation, you know, that we want to go inside. We're not generally speaking, meditating with the purpose of any form of, you know, to acquire anything, to know anything. We just want to be in meditation. With samyama, the focus that we bring to a certain, generally speaking, organ or problem or issue, there is an agenda. In other words, we want to know something, we want to find something, we want to understand something, we want to deepen our connection to the inherent powers in our being. So that's how we're going to do these chakra meditations tonight, with a sense of trying to uncover the practical gifts that they can give us. You know, the way samyama is defined makes it seem like something very high and extraordinary, whereas in practice, samyama is actually a skill that's available to us to pretty much get to know anything. There are actually many levels to samyama, as there are many levels of samadhi. The deepest and most truth-bearing level of samadhi is the focus, the concentration, where we have actually become one with what it is that we're meditating on. So it's a post-samadhi state. It's a very enlightened, awakened, highly sattvic way of giving directionality to our consciousness, moving it towards whatever we need to understand. But as I say, we, for the purposes of practice, we can call samyama a method of fully targeted focus that we might undertake, as I said earlier, after meditation, not necessarily having reached a full samadhi, but just feeling indrawn enough so that our access to intuitive awareness can, you know, can be more available. And I want to tell you that it's really helpful, and I want to encourage you to learn how to recognize this state when you're connected in that way. I used to have a very strong petitionary prayer practice. I still do it, but not to the extent that I used to. And when there was something that I deeply wanted to understand, or when I wanted to change a situation, I would go into the heart and I would pray for knowledge or for transformation in the state. And I noticed that when I was connected into the heart, which was a much deeper form of connection than just, you know, saying, oh, please, let me understand this, or let this get better, that when I was deeply connected into the heart, this kind of space would open up, a kind of spacious presence would open up, and that was when prayers would be answered. The kind of prayer that I'm talking about is actually a form of samyama. And its success, so to speak, actually depends on your ability to get connected. Sometimes it's enough just to have the mind become fairly still to enter that state of connection. You know, and it happens not only in seated meditation, but whenever you're doing an activity in which you're able to become absorbed and distraction and mental static dissolves. So, you know, when you're walking, when you're chanting, when you're swimming, when you're painting, many of us have physical activities that where we find ourselves in this state, and this is where answers to problems arise and kind of deeper states come online. You know exactly what I'm talking about. So the truth that Patanjali is telling us in this chapter is that these samyama practices, especially if we do them on familiar aspects of our inner being, are ways of opening up your access to prajna, to your pure intuitive awareness, and cultivating it as it begins to come online. But understand that as we're doing these practices, that there are deeper and deeper levels of yoga experience and insight that these sutras are pointing to, and that can be part of our future experience, if not of our present experience, as I know it is for some of you. Because this is the promise that the Yoga Sutra tells us, is that we have these capacities. Again, we're just going to return to our breath practice for a moment, breathing with the sense of the breath flowing through the nostrils, flowing up to the soft palate, flowing up to the center of the head, all of this on the inhalation. And then with the exhalation, allowing the space in the ajna, the space in the center of the head, to extend downward to include the space behind the breastbone, the upper space of the heart. Hopefully many of you had a chance to work with the two samyama practices that we worked with last week and that we offered in the study guide, the samyama on compassion and the samyama on a strong recurring samskara. I know that several of you wrote in that meditation on compassion was really helpful in particular situations, which it certainly is, and especially if you connect to that zone of compassion about 12 inches in front of the heart, which also surrounds the body and is part of your auric field. The effect of the meditation of the samyama on samskaras can be very deep. The sutra says that you can discover past karma, past lives, from looking at a particular samskara. This may or may not happen, though it is actually one of the protocols that people do when they're doing, trying to do recover past life memories. But the practice is valuable for reasons which I think are more significant. So my experience with doing samyama on a deep mental pattern is that the act of contemplating it, tuning into it, drilling into it with attention, actually trains you in standing aside from the pattern so that it can become an object of perception, something you're looking at rather than something you're looking through. Because remember, a samskara is more than a thought. It's an entire gestalt. It's a thought-feeling complex that you're carrying in your body, in the cells, in the muscles, in the organs. And when you meditate on a samskara, it starts to reveal not only its various layers, you can start to feel where it is in your body, and also how it limits you. So, a really deep samskara, like I'm smart, or I or I'm unlovable, or the rules don't apply to me, or whatever yours are, most of us have one or many of the, you know, main, let's say, 25 or 30 samskaras. We're not that different from each other. But the thing is that a really deep samskara feels like it's the truth. You don't think of it as a thought or as an emotion, but as a fact about who you are. In other words, your deep samskaras are expressions of your false identity, which does get carried from lifetime to lifetime. So feeling and becoming aware of doing samyama, fully immersing yourself in the thought-feeling complex through samyama and disidentifying with it, lets you literally rise beyond the samskara. You know, in developmental psychology, they say that the subject of one stage of development becomes an object of the next. So when you're in your ego, you know, your limited ego state, you are your body-mind. There's no separation between your body-mind. When you have a meditative experience and you're able to look at and do some samyama on a samskara complex, it actually takes you out of that aspect of the ego which identifies with the samskara and puts you into a much subtler and more sattvic aspect of the ego, which is the ego of the witness. You know, it may not be the full enlightened ego, but it's a much more transcendent and skillful aspect of your personal self. And this is a clue as to how to practice with a deep samskara if what you're interested in doing is freeing yourself from it. So you do some samyama on it, you focus very strongly on the whole feeling gestalt of it. And then while you're doing it, you allow a part of your mind to ascend to the witness state, to become aware of the invisible knower, the cognizer who's present to all your experience. And then you hold the two together, the felt sense of the samskara and the witness awareness that is able to see and stand apart from it, and toggling back and forth between the thought-feeling complex and the detached knower, you begin to disidentify with the samskara. And as I said earlier, it's a much more valuable outcome than seeing your past lives. And it's part of what allows us to begin to disidentify, to see through the kleshas, the egoic identifications, attachments, aversions, and fears that literally clog and shrink the citta. A citta clogged with samskaras is like a kidney with kidney stones. You know, the functions are impaired because there's so much schmutz in it. So, you know, but as the ego stops identifying so closely with the body-mind, and as attachment and aversions diminish, the clogs and the barriers in the mind field are released, and it's like water freed from a dam. The energy of citta expands and flows outward and begins to reveal its innate powers of cognition. These are the powers that begin to become available to us as intuitive wisdom through these meditations, including the ones in the different centers of the body. So we're going to start with the practice that's described in Sutra 29 of some translations and Sutra 30 in other translations. The Prabhavananda version calls it Sutra 30. The Hariharananda translation calls it Sutra 29. Here's how it goes. Nabhi chakre kaya vyuhanyanam. By samyama on the navel chakra comes knowledge of the components of the body. So nabhi means navel, chakra you know, kaya means body, vyuha means arrangements or components. In other words, it means the way the body's organized begins to become apparent. So the traditional commentators on this sutra interpret it to mean that that when you meditate on the navel, it helps you understand the components of the body according to Ayurveda. You know, you can see your doshas. You can understand where the nadis, the pranic channels go. My experience with this meditation, however, is that it actually has an immediate daily effect. In other words, tuning into the navel chakra and meditating on the navel is a way of developing the skill to intuit the state of your body, its imbalances, and even its nutritional needs. So this is a tremendously practical samyama, because the navel region, as you know, is physically related to the gut tube, which is actually the first organ that a baby develops during her time in the womb, during his time in the womb, when the child is being fed through the umbilical cord of the mother. The gut tube develops at a very early stage in the embryo, and it's absolutely foundational to our existence as in a human body. And, you know, of course, we know now, and the ancients knew very well, that your health is dependent on the state of the gut. So meditation on the navel chakra can begin to create balance of the energy channels in the body, all of which, you know, the energy channels, the nadis, actually arise from the navel region. They go all over the body, but they're all rooted in the navel region. And it's also, of course, if you know your chakra system, which I know most of you do, it's the part of the body connected to the element of fire, which means that navel-focused samyama really helps bring up your physical energy. And this meditation also activates the hara, the lower dantian, as it's called in Taoism, which is the source of our qi, our physical energy, the subtle aspect of our physical energy. One of the interesting things about this chakra is its position. You know, there's a certain amount of, I wouldn't say disagreement, but different systems place chakras in different places in the physical body. Someone actually asked in the Q&A whether the chakras move around. They don't, but you may experience them in different ways and in different spots in the same general area. So some of the entrance points to the chakras are in the front of the body, like the navel. But you can also enter the chakra, which is how I normally do it, from deep inside the body. Or you can approach them through the chakra points in the spinal column, you know, between the vertebrae at particular points. What this means is that when you want to fully experience a chakra, the best way to do it is to go into the area and move your focus around it until you get a felt sense of connectedness, sort of like what I was talking about in my prayer experience. So this sensation of connection, it's a little bit like that moment, you know, when you're turning the dial on the radio, and then there's this moment when the channel comes in clearly. We have to practice to recognize the connection to a chakra. It's something that you learn by familiarity. At first, you're kind of clueless because you're not used to bringing your attention there. But the more you focus there, again, as many of you know, the more familiar you become with the area, and the more you actually can be able to do a very productive samyama practice. So navel center is not in one tiny point. It's actually an entire region. And if you understand that, it helps make sense of the fact that different Eastern traditions seem to disagree about the location. So, for example, in martial arts, the lower dantian, the hara, which I am calling part of the navel center, it's usually described as being 2 to 3 inches below the belly, but it actually starts at the navel, and you'll find many Taoist practitioners who will tell you to meditate directly on the navel or behind the navel to find the hara, the lower dantian. And in the same way, the Manipura chakra is generally considered to be the area around the navel, but it also goes all the way up to the solar plexus, includes the diaphragm, and all the way down to the region 2 to 3 inches below the navel, which in the chakra system is considered the top of the second chakra. So samyama on this region, so all of these, it's the navel center, the belly center, is a big area. It's not a tiny point. It's also, there's a lot of gifts that you get from the from meditation in this center. But the main thing that I work with it for is for kind of instinctive awareness and healing. It's also very grounding. You know, it's if you're feeling out of your body, if you feel like you need grounding, this is the center to meditate on. So let's do it. So here, this is a moment to ground your posture, to get yourself into a fully upright meditative posture. And you can put your hands over your belly, or even put your finger in your belly button. It's a very sensitive area, and very awake area, actually. So begin to feel now that you're breathing into the navel, as though the breath is flowing in through the navel itself and into the area behind the navel, deep inside the belly. So take a few moments to cultivate the breathing here. At first, it may feel kind of opaque. You may not have any sense that you can guide the breath to this area. But as you let your attention settle here, it'll become more and more real. And as you cultivate the Nabhi Chakra, the navel center, you can begin to get a feeling that the breath actually is flowing in through the navel. See if you can let the breath guide you to the area in the center of the belly. Inside. And if you like, you can imagine a circle of warmth and radiance. Perhaps imagining a little ball about 1 inch in diameter, glowing with an orange-red light, or with a yellow-gold light, yellow being one of the centers of this region. The colors of the Manipura Chakra, the navel center, are sun colors, red and orange and gold. And in the traditional Taoist meditation, we imagine this golden ball, glowing, vibrant, warm in the center of the belly, and feel that every breath touches that golden ball and makes it glow. Doesn't matter if you visualize it, just have a sense of the presence in your belly, of a radiant center of warmth. Let the breath become deeply relaxed and soft. You might want to move your attention through the area, moving towards the back of this part of the inner belly from side to side to the top, to the bottom. Sensing the inner energy of this region. Letting your attention take rest there, perhaps in the space of the glowing golden ball, focusing as deeply as possible in this region. Ask, what does my body most need now on this day, at this time? What does my body most need? Just offer the question into the space in the belly with a real curiosity. What does my body most need? See if you can keep your attention there. Now, what can happen? This is, of course, this center, this chakra is a very, very layered place in the body. And as you begin to meditate in it, you may feel a sense of deep rest, or you may feel some discomfort, which might have to do with what's going on in your gut right now. And that's part of the information that you may be getting. But I would tell you that if you were to do this practice for 2 or 3 minutes every day, especially before eating, it'll take you deeper into an intuitive awareness of your body's needs. There's a protocol that we are often advised to do if we're taking a traditional approach to our healing process, which is to ask yourself before, before you prepare a meal or order a meal, ask yourself, what does my body want? That is not, what do I feel, what does my tongue want, or what does my mind want, or what do I think I should eat, but what does my body want? And this is the place to ask the question. You turn into the navel, go deeper into it, ask the question, and whether the response comes up as an answer or as a kind of a subtle inclination, you can learn to interpret it, and you can ask yourself questions like, how can I strengthen my digestion, or how can I heal my gut? Checking in with your navel chakra in this way is an incredible source of information once you start to do it. And for many of us, unless we do martial arts, we're not so familiar with the belly center. But it is the center within which we can get all kinds of intuitive answers about our health, the state of our organs, our nutrition. This is one of the superpowers of the Nabi Chakra. We'll show you about your body. And the other thing about it is that it will create healing. Meditation on the hara, on the belly, is one of the protocols that Taoist teachers, Qigong healers, will tell you. It really can deeply change your state, as many of you are aware of. So, and this is true of each of these chakra points. They have an interior spiritual effect. They also have a physical effect. And I find that this is the real power of samyama on the chakras. Your state when you do samyama on the navel helps quiet the mind, but it also has particular effects that are different from the effect of meditation in the heart center, or meditation in the soft palate, meditation in the crown. Each of these points can be a focal point for meditation, but they can also change your state in ordinary life. So if you're feeling ungrounded, or if you want to feel physically stronger or get an intuitive sense of what lies behind a physical imbalance, meditation in the navel is a great resource. If you're feeling very separated and disconnected or out of relationship with people, meditation in the heart will open you to the connection. For, when you're spacey or your memory is not working very well, or when you're having a hard time mentally focusing, meditation on the Ajna will start to open that up. So, for a normal meditator, somebody who's not deliberately going after the siddhi, the description of the siddhi actually lets you know what area of your being is being targeted. And this can start to give you, to show you how you can use the skills of meditation in the day-to-day. So you may have no interest or need to discover the components of the solar system by meditating on the sun, which is one of the sutras here, or to become invisible by contemplating the form of your body, or by learning how to manipulate the pranas for certain effects. But discovering how to enhance the powers of your subtle senses and receive intuitive guidance is really life-changing. So the next sutra, the next set of samyama instructions, directly targets higher states of consciousness. And this is a meditation, it's Sutta 32. The Sanskrit goes like this, Murdha Jyotisha Siddha Darshanam. By making samyama on the light in the skull, a vision of the siddhas, the perfected beings, is attained. So what is the light in the skull? Let's just start by saying what the siddhas are. The siddhas, for those of you who aren't familiar with this term, are enlightened beings from many traditions. They represent the highest stage of human enlightenment, and they're beings who are no longer in physical bodies, but who are said in Tibetan and Hindu traditions, in Taoist traditions, and in the Abrahamic traditions for that matter. They exist in subtle forms to give help and support to the rest of us. In the Christian and Jewish traditions, they're called angels. In the Eastern traditions, they are considered to be enlightened beings who have passed on to the next plane. My guru, in his autobiography, Plane of Consciousness, actually described his experience of traveling to a subtle world made of blue light, where he recognized realized beings from his own tradition and others. And he says that he included these experiences as testimony to the fact that the texts of the yogic tradition are not fantasies, they're not made up, they're actually describing experiences that are possible. So we've actually done versions of this practice in the past, especially in the Kundalini course and the Path of Life and Death course. And it is actually the basis for establishing a secure connection to higher beings and higher worlds. You can tune into this part of your body, ask for connection, and as you practice it, you'll begin to experience it. So the light in the skull actually refers to the Brahmarandhra, the topmost part of the Ajna Chakra, just underneath the skull, which opens into the highest chakra, the Sahasrara. That's what's called the Brahmarandhra. It's the kind of the doorway to the Absolute. So when you bring your attention here and consistently practice samyama on this spot with the intention to call forth the presence of higher beings, you are actually opening a channel to the higher worlds. And again, I want to say that this channel exists. For most of us, much of the time, it's kind of clogged up by our samskaras and by the fact that we don't actually practice upper chakra hygiene. But once the channel is open, you can call on higher presences to be with you, and they will flow their energy into your body through the crown. And we're going to practice it in a minute. I want to talk a little bit more about it. It's really important when you perform this practice to be soft and relaxed, because the crown is a portal to some very powerful energies. And if you try too hard to reach it, to open it, it can create a barrier to experiencing the energies and a kind of grasping that actually creates resistance. So the appropriate way to practice with this samyama is very, very softly start to bring your attention to the crown of the head. You can put your hand on your crown just to help you bring your attention there. And feel your awareness just under the top of the skull. And now let your attention flow upward through the crown to a space about 8 finger widths above the crown, towards the back of the head, about 2 inches behind the skull, from this point, 8 inches above it. And we're going to do this, we'll just take a few moments to start the breathing process. Inhale through the nostrils and allow the breath to rise up directly into the area inside the head, inside the skull, up to just inside the skull. And then imagine that it very gently flows upward from the skull up 6 to 8 inches above the crown and slightly behind. Don't worry if it doesn't seem easy. It's your intention that matters. It's as though you're letting the breath gently open up your connection to this area. This space is, it's above the crown and slightly behind. And this is an area that's sometimes in certain shamanic traditions, it's called the spirit door. It's one of the openings through which your guides and angels and helpful spirits contact you. And it's in the yogic tradition, it's considered to be, this area of the body is considered to be the site of the primordial guru. And in Shakta Tantricism, this is the seat where the goddess is in constant ecstatic union with her consort. So when Kundalini rises from the Muladhara to the crown, when this happens spontaneously, then it will open your consciousness to this area. The other thing that this meditation does, and we practiced it during the Path of Life and Death course earlier this year and in 2019 as well, this is the doorway through which the body moves to, through which the soul moves to the higher realms after death. And so it has that effect, but it also, while you're in a body, has the potential to draw great reservoirs of love and grace down on you and to channel the wisdom of the higher worlds. So find yourself now in a comfortable upright posture. Soften your attention and awareness. Breathe so that the lower body grounds with the inhalation and the upper body rises with the exhalation. Your buttocks are heavy. Your torso is light. Your shoulder blades release onto the back. And allow the breath to flow through the nostrils up to the soft palate with the inhalation and up into the center of the head until it reaches the area just under the top of the skull. If you like, you can add the mantra Hamsa. The inhalation takes you to the top of the skull. With the exhalation, become aware of the presence of a silvery moon. The disk of the moon as though it were sitting above your crown. Again, it's not necessary to visualize it, but see if you can get a sense of its luminescence, the cooling quality of it, its silvery luminosity. In the subtle body, the sun is the source of life-giving warmth. The moon is the symbol of the silent mind. And it's the source of the nectar that begins to infuse our being as these centers open. So as the inhalation flows up to the crown, the exhalation flows upward into this sense of the silvery energy above the crown, this space of the Brahmarandra is both inside and outside the body. As you practice this breathing into the upper centers, into the crown, allow yourself to feel that your head expands. So the center that you're becoming aware of here, it's not only above your body, it's also much larger. And when you breathe into it, you might begin to feel that the physical body is contained inside the energy that comes online here. I feel that the energetic expansiveness in the breath guides your attention backwards about 2 inches so that you're stationed above the back of the head. And feel that there is a kind of channel, almost like a tube, that extends from an area beyond the crown, about 8 inches above the head and about 2 inches behind it. And with your attention in this spot, ask that your teachers and guides be present. Ask that you be surrounded by the beings of light to whom you are connected. To the bodhisattvas, to siddhas, to angels, to the teachers of your lineage. You may not have a specific sense of them, but just know that these beings are present. They surround you. And when you call them, you give permission for them to be fully present with you, present within your awareness. Feel that the loving energetic presence of these beings hovers around your head, surrounds you. And as you inhale, let yourself deepen your sense of connection to them, and as you exhale, feel that they shower grace on you. Feel that their light, their shakti, their blessing flows into your body. Ask into this space, may I experience your presence and grace. May your presence illuminate my mind and heart. And allow the inhalation to flow upwards into this region and the exhalation to draw the energy of these beings down into the body, filling your head, flowing down your neck and into your shoulders, filling your body with the feeling of presence and radiance and grace. Every inhalation draws your attention upward. Every exhalation draws presence and light and loving energy down into your body. We'll sit with this for a few minutes. With your next exhalation, feel that you fully draw the energy from above the crown into your body, into the heart. One of the fruits of this meditation is that you can begin getting intuitive downloads from these higher regions, which means that this center is one of the gateways, one of the samyama practices that awakens the intuitive knowledge called pratibha, which is the knowledge, the awareness, the intuition that literally surrounds us, because prakriti, the shakti that is at the heart of everything, surrounds and holds everything, has the nature of intelligence. It's as the nature of knowledge. And when you open one of these gateways and meditate on it with intention, the knowledge of these realms begins to become available to you. There's one of the sutras, it's actually the next sutra, Sutra 33, says, once pratibha is awakened, intuitive knowledge of everything becomes available. Pratibhad ava sarvam. Through pratibha, through awakened intuition, comes knowledge of everything, because it's intrinsic in the cosmos and in us. So this is one of the most powerful practices for receiving deeply transformative information. And so is the next one that we're going to do. We're going to connect the heart and the Sahasrar and begin to follow the Samyama that over time allows your chitta, your subtle mind, to open itself to the full potential that it, that is its nature. So you might want to take a few deep breaths and shake out. Maybe stand and stretch or take a deep bend, deep forward fold. Sutra 34. Says Hridaye Chitta Samvit. Hridaye Chitta Samvit. Now it's the usual translation is by Samyama on the heart, illuminated knowledge of the chitta occurs. That's one way of translating it. I would say that we could also say through the heart, the illumined chitta is revealed, because samvit is not—it's not normal knowledge. You know, it's not knowledge of the components of the mind. It is actually the illumination that can reveal whatever aspects of your consciousness are there to be revealed. Obviously, focusing on the heart is a practice that many of you have done in the past. It's one of my main practices. And this samyama, in fact, is the yogic version or the yogic pointing out instructions of a practice that is core to every mystical tradition. So the Western traditions, mystical Christianity and Sufism and also in mystical Judaism, consider the heart to be an organ of perception. And there are some Christian mystics who are, you know, when they talk about the heart, they mean the muscle, the physical heart. In the Eastern traditions, we consider the heart to be, the mystical heart to be slightly to the right of the physical heart. And that's how we're going to practice with it today. But if you'd like to just put your hands over your sternum, over the center of the breastbone, and become aware of the heartbeat beneath your hands. As we begin this practice and begin talking about it, we can also be aware that just as the soft palate is a doorway to a particular mystical state, so the physical heart is such a doorway, and the physical navel is such a doorway. Though the states we enter when we focus on them are subtle, they're very much connected to the physical organs, because our bodies, our physical bodies, are absolutely inundated with the subtle, with the energy of Prakriti, and with the knowledge that can transform our physical experience into subtle and ultimately transcendent experience. So when we say that focus on the heart opens us to the illuminated chitta, what we're actually talking about, in, to put it in Western mystical terms, is what the Western traditions call the opening of the eye of the heart. You know, the eye of the physical eyes, of course, see physical objects. The eye of the mind is able to analyze and think about things and see through things on a mental level. The eye of the heart is the deep intuitive knowledge that shows us the real nature of reality and ourselves. In the Christian tradition, the heart is considered the doorway to the Christ energy, which is not simply the energy of the historical Jesus, but the, really the energy of grace itself, which of course permeates the universe. In Hindu devotional mysticism, the heart is understood to have several different levels, but mainly it's seen as the abode of both the Atman, the divine spark, that is God within the human being, and also as the abode of the Paramatman, the supreme self, which in the Yoga Sutra is called Ishvara. According to the Chandogya Upanishad, the very famous line in it, which many of you know, within the heart is a lotus, and within the lotus is a flame, which is the light of the Atman, the inner self. And there's another verse from the Mundaka Upanishad, which says, two birds sit on a tree, one tastes the fruit, the other witnesses it. And this is a reference to teaching that within your heart, within the chakra of the heart, within the hridaya, is both the light of your individual self and also the light of the Supreme Self, the light of the divine, the aspect of the divine, the aspect of God that lives in you as your individual deity self, and into which your personal Atman, your Jivatman, as it's called, will eventually recognize its oneness, its non-duality. So, basically, I mean, to take it out of the symbolic language, the heart is a gateway into the experience of essence, into your innate sense of being, into the wordless feeling of existence. And it's not that there's some kind of mini-me or, you know, mini-God hidden in our heart. It's more that the two aspects of our consciousness, the purely human and the purely divine, are both present here. And depending on our level of awareness, we can experience either or both of them at the same time. You know, and as we meditate in the heart, something else happens, which is that the wisdom of the heart shows us our samskaras. You know, the heart center is also an emotional center. So it's the place where our wounds, our traumas, our feelings, our emotions are stored. And this is the reason why when we first start to meditate in the heart, our first experience may be of an uprush of emotion, or it may be of numbness, because many of us have armored ourselves to protect our hearts, which are so vulnerable to the wounds that come to us through the course of life, that we kind of numb ourselves there. And so the practice of meditation in the heart is truly crucial to opening us up to what lies within us beyond the emotions and beyond the numbness, both of which act like guardians of the gate to the inner world. The lotus of the heart is the energetic space that opens up for us as we meditate on this center. It's not an actual lotus, although people do have visions of it. And I want to read you how Pandit Rajmani describes it in his commentary on Sutra 36 of Book 1. And those of you who have that text, some of you who were here for the first two courses, you might like to go back and read it, you know, this week during homework, so, because it's a very beautiful explanation of the spiritual energy, the transcendent energy in the heart center. So this is what he says: although this expanded field of luminosity has no borders, there is a sense of it occupying a discrete body of space. Even though this field is not physical, it's purely a field of awareness. As we enter it, it surrounds our body. At the level of feeling, it subsumes our body. And when we meditate here, our sense of being, of existing as a self, is transported from our physical body to this field of awareness. And it's in this field of awareness that we locate the spiritual heart. So when we meditate on the lotus of the heart, we aren't imagining an image of a lotus. We're meditating on the luminous space at the center of our physical heart. It's the resting ground of our consciousness and the abode of the divinity that rests inside our body. As you meditate on this space, one of its qualities is that there's a feeling of intimacy and tenderness in it, which is one of the reasons why meditation on the spiritual heart is so powerful for us, because it's a relational center. And, you know, my own experience of meditation on the heart, which I've been doing for about 40 years, is that just in the process of allowing my breath to take me behind the breastbone and into that space, the core feelings of unhappiness and discontentment and, you know, all the negative feelings I carried about myself and other people were over time dissolved by the energy in the heart center. So it's really a life-saving practice. It's a transformative practice. And the only thing is that we have to have the courage to be willing to be present in the heart space when it doesn't feel good. Because in the process of entering the heart chakra, there will be purification and there will be the experience of difficult emotions that will arise sometimes. The thing is to keep being aware of the larger heart space that begins to arise, which is itself citta samvit. We're going to spend some time here meditating on the heart space, on the lotus of the heart. Those of you who've practiced with me over the years know that one of the ways I like to practice with the heart is to inhale and exhale with the feeling that the breath is flowing into through the front of the heart and opening up the space through the torso. But today and this week, we're going to meditate on the heart lotus through the practice that we've been doing throughout the course. In other words, we're going to enter the heart lotus from above, from the Ajna. So you can close your eyes. We've been cultivating this practice throughout the class today. So begin to just be present with the breath. Actually, I'm going to ask you to locate the heart center by placing your hands over the sternum and just bringing your attention behind the breastbone, behind your hands. Just getting a felt sense of the heart center, the heart energy. Now begin to bring your awareness to the nostrils. Feel the breath flowing upward through the nasal passages, touching the soft palate. The inhalation continues up into the center of the head, to the area of the Ajna, all the way up to the bottom of the skull, to the underside of the skull. And then with the exhalation, feel that this space inside the head expands downward into the region of the heart. So the inhalation flows in, and you may find that it actually flows in from the nostrils directly into the Ajna, expanding the Ajna, and then the exhalation stretches the Ajna chakra downward so that you become aware that there is one region, one space, the center within the head, connected to the center within the heart. And you can begin to feel that the breath is flowing vertically from the region within the head, the region of the Ajna chakra, downward to the region within the heart. If you like, you can join the mantra Hamsa to the breath, bringing mantra Shakti into your practice. But feel that the currents of the breath are like swells, like tides, like currents. And that this region between the Ajna and the Hridaya, between the head and the heart, is an open, expansive space. You may be aware of it as within your body, your physical body, but its quality is of energy, of spaciousness, and of vibration. Just let the breath expand this space, extending from just beneath the crown to the whole region behind the sternum. And little by little, find your attention melting into the heart space. As though the inhalation originates in the heart and the exhalation gently expands that region. Let the currents of breath guide your attention. The lotus of the heart is this subtle spaciousness into which the breath falls on the inhalation, from which it arises on the exhalation. As you sense into it, allow yourself to simply be present in the heart. You're riding the swells of the breath. Opening to the subtle pulsation. Within this region of your inner body. You're letting it be. You're trusting in the presence. You're just being. Notice your inner state of awareness, how your heart feels, how your energy feels. Please take a few minutes before you get up and take a few minutes, if you're drawn to it, to write down what your experience was of that meditation or of the meditations that we did in the course of the class. In Samyama, there are particular questions that focus in these centers allows us to receive insight into. What is the state of my body with the Nabi Chakra? How can I feel the presence of the protective energies and teachers through whom I receive grace, through the crown? And who and what am I? What is my true being? What is the nature of myself through the heart? So you'll be receiving this, the audio of this class tomorrow, and a homework assignment for meditation and study of the sutras in the next couple of days. Please do feel free to share your experience on the listserv as you have been doing. It's very powerful for us to read each other's insights and experience. Thank you so much for being with us. So much love to all of you. Namaste.